Kadosh. Remember, remember, Adonai Eloheinu.
Welcome to Romamu, an open-hearted Jewish community and house of worship, learning, and spiritual growth. You're listening to Romamu's podcast, where we share words of Torah, insights, and inspiration from Romamu clergy. Thank you for being with us.
This week is a splitting of a lot of things in two. This week's Torah portion, Ki Tisah, begins with a splitting of a shekel. It's split in half, and then the census is taken by that split. And so splitting is the theme in the Parsha. The split between the Israelites and Moses, who was essentially up on Mount Sinai. The split that happens between the first tablets and the second tablets, and so on. I want to highlight one moment in this incredible story in this week's Parsha, which is essentially after the Israelites have created a golden calf. Do you all remember that there was a golden calf? Yeah, we'd like to forget it, but it's an important moment in the Torah. In many ways, it becomes the most important example of falling from grace that we have. The fall in the Garden of Eden is nothing compared to this fall. The fall from having heard God's words mouth to mouth, face to face at Mount Sinai, and then immediately creating and fashioning a golden calf, an egel masecha, an egel zahav. Immediately after they have made this golden calf, the camera pans in the Torah to give us like a scene on what's happening at Mount Sinai at that moment. So essentially, chapter 32 of the book of Exodus begins with a camera focusing on what's happening at the foot of the mountain. But then immediately after the fashioning of the golden calf, we're now at the mountaintop, at the peak. And there God says to Moses, Lech reid ki shichet amcha sharlita me'eretz Mitzrayim. Says, go down that nation that you, your nation, the one that you took out of Egypt, not my nation, but your nation, they have destroyed. They have hashrata. They've completely destroyed what we built. Saru ma'er min aderech hashet zivitim asulam egel masecha. They turned away from the path. The only other place where this word to turn from the path is with Moses himself, who turns from the path he's on to see God in the burning bush. So this is the polar opposite. They turned from the vision of God that they had to a vision of emptiness and golden calf ignorance. And so God says to him, they bowed to it, they worship and they offered sacrifices, and God quotes back to Moses what the Israelites said. And then Moses begins to entreat God. It's like an amazing moment. Moses begins to ask God, please do me a favor on behalf of the ancestors. And God his anger is abated. Excuse me one second, before that. And God says to Moses, and God says to Moses, I've seen this nation and they're really a stiff-necked people. If you don't know this part of the Bible. So God says, listen, leave me alone and I'm going to destroy them and then I'll make you, Moses, into your own nation. Not God's best moment. But what's remarkable, of course, in this verse is he says to Moses, now leave me alone. But what does Moses do? Moses begins to pray and extensively pray. Moses begins to like offer this, ornate prayer to God, reminding God, hey God, what will the Egyptians think of you? It's not good for your reputation. They'll say that you took them out of Egypt only to destroy them here. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And in the end, after five verses of entreating, God is appeased. But what is this moment where God says to Moses, leave me alone? Hanichali, leave me alone. As if Moses was bothering him. And the rabbis are bothered by God being bothered. What is God saying when he says to Moses, leave me alone? And furthermore, how is God's request to be left alone answered by Moses, who's supposed to be a really good listener? And he doesn't leave him alone, but what happens? He increases what he hadn't even started. God says, leave me alone. Moshe says, okay, let me start. How does that make sense? So the rabbis, of course, always attuned to listening to the text. They smell the text. The rabbis say, I'm not going to quote it. I know it. The rabbis say that when God said to Moses, leave me alone, it was like a parable can be offered to like somebody who's in a room with someone and says, now leave me alone out loud before I do such and such. As if God, so the rabbis were giving a pitchon peh. You better not stop me before I do this. Wink, 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 wink. The rabbis here in God saying, leave me alone, when Moses was not yet bothering God, an invitation for Moses to bother God. Does anybody ever know this phenomenon? If you've ever been a child yourself and you say to your parents, leave me alone, I don't need you now. And what does that mean? Please don't leave me alone, I really need you now. In a marriage, those kinds of bids, says one famous psychologist and someone who researched marriage success, those kinds of bids come from lovers all the time. But they often come in the opposite form, leave me alone, or I don't need you now. Those are codes for I'm really having a hard time saying what I really need. And God models in the rabbi's construction here, which is remarkable, God is not emotionally strong enough, you could say, to say, I'm about to do something I really don't want to do. Can you please help me? Help me not be the worst version of myself, God says. You could also say, if you want to be more theologically, you could say that God leaves room for us because we're partners with God, and God, of course, knows what God won't do, but wants us to participate in helping God be the best God God can be. It's an amazing teaching for us as we are about to stand for the Baruch Hu. What are the things that we ask for, but in a backwards way? What are the things we really wish we could say frontally that we don't? How is it that we communicate our needs? Do we just give over hints to people and expect them to figure it out? Or maybe more deeply, maybe for ourselves, maybe in a world where almost all of us have a hard time communicating directly what we need, how do we become detectives the way that Moshe was to hear in God's small little phrase, Hanifali, leave me alone, a pitkon pen opening for Moshe to say, oh, really? Okay, God, let me pray now. There are so many places in our world right now that need our prayers. There might be people next to us right now who, if they could tell you what they were hoping, you would pray for them, right? They pray with me for my kid. It's not the right setting for it, but let's just assume that everybody who's sitting next to us is probably saying on some level, Hanichali, please leave me alone, but don't. I'm here all by myself, and that's the way I'd like it, but really not. Something beautiful, don't you think, in the way that the rabbis read these two words from God. It almost makes me feel so much love for God. Like, oh, really, God? I get angry too sometimes, and I also have a hard time asking for the right thing, just like you. So I know we're not at the end of the Torah, but I wanted to bring us to the end of the Torah tonight for a moment. The last three verses in the Torah. V'lo kam navi od b'Yisrael k'moshe asher yidao Adonai panim el panim. Never again would a prophet arise in Israel like Moses, whom God knew face to face. V'chol ha'otot v'amoftim, for all of the signs and the wonders asher shlacho Adonai lasod be'eret Mitzrayim, that God had sent him to do in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh and to all of Pharaoh's servants and to the whole land. And this is the last verse. U'lechol ha'yada chazaka, and for all of the strong hand, u'lechol ha'mora ha'gadol asher asa Moshe, and all the wondrous sight, the great sight that Moses did le'enei kol Yisrael, before the eyes of the Jewish. So if you were reading this for the first 1,000 years or maybe the first 800 years or so, I think you stopped your average person, maybe even now, if you haven't yet looked at some of the commentators like Rashi. If I were to ask you, like, point blank, what do you think those verses are referring to? Like the great acts that Moses performed, you probably, I mean, what's your top 10 list? I know, splitting the Red Sea, 10 plagues, I don't know, Mount Sinai, going up the mountain, water from a rock. I mean, there's no short list, right? So what's remarkable is that the very last verse of the Torah, which is itself is significant, that it's the last verse of the Torah, the great medieval commentator Rashi quotes, Chazal quotes the rabbis who say, what is the great sight and the great hand that the Jewish people saw that emerged from Moses, their leader? Asher nisa'o libo lishbor et aluchot, v'kadosh baruch hu natan lo yasher kochacha. Rashi says that the great, right? Rashi, who's right, the 11th century in France, says, what is being alluded to in the great moment of Moses is, you know, the Torah saying how great Moses was? Of all of those miracles, none of them makes the list. Rashi chooses, this commentator chooses, that Moses had it within his heart to break the tablets, and God said, way to go. I don't know about you, but that wasn't my, I was taken by surprise when I learned that first, you know, like, what? That's the greatest of all of your accomplishments, Moshe? That's what you want the future commentator on the Torah to say? That your greatest moment was the moment when you saw the Jewish people in their lowest point and broke the tablets? And what's this business with God saying, way to go, Mo? What is that all about? What is that all about? So it's a It's a well-known statement of the Talmud. When God tells Moses to carve out the second set of tablets, he says to him, I will write on the second set of tablets what I wrote, what was on the first ones that you broke. And the rabbis note that when God says that you broke, God didn't need to say that. That was kind of cruel. Asher shibarta, like that you broke, Moses knows that he broke them. So whenever there's something extra in the Torah, the rabbis think, oh, someone's winking at us here. There's something to learn. And the word asher, that, sounds like osher, which means may you be strengthened. And so the rabbis, especially one rabbi named Reish Lakish, Shimon ben Lakish, who was himself once a criminal and then reformed his ways and became a great rabbi, he says that God leaned into Moses, who had just done the most criminal act someone could have. I mean, think about what Moses did. I mean, when he came down the mountain, he was holding Fabergé eggs. He was holding tablets that the Torah had said in verse 16 of chapter 32 was Michtav Elohim. It was written with God's, like, this was precious. No, don't break that, Moses. Break something else. I mean, throw a tiff, you know, I don't know what, you throw your staff down, stomp your feet, I don't know, grab some, you know, your guitar and smash it, you know. No, not yours. But like, and then get this, in the Torah, we don't see anywhere that God gets angry at him. No, no. God gets angry at other things, like the Jewish people for building the golden calf. But like after God had gone through all of this work to make these perfect tablets, we don't see anywhere that God said to Moses in ways that God did in other places. Like, hey, you know, that wasn't cool. You hit the rock. You broke these tablets. They were kind of special to me. So this Reish Lakish, Rabbi Shimon Lakish says, Ya'ashir kochacha shishibarta. He imagines God giving Moshe, what's a yeshikoach? Yeshikoach is like, way to go. You should have strength. In other words, you did right. And so Moshe's great moment is that he had the willingness to break the tablets and that God said it was the right thing to do. You could say that Jewish history is itself in some way a reflection of that truth, that from broken places, we had great strength. And then in fact, as the tradition tells us, there would have been no second set, and the second set were much greater than the first because the second set, as anyway, others have said, Yitzhak Aramah, Akedat Yitzhak and others, the second set of tablets were sustainable. They were imperfect. They were made with human hands. With God inscription, they were partnership. From the brokenness, from the broken place, the very thing that needed to be broken, Moshe, as a leader, knew that some things had to break, some forms needed to be renewed. And he had the chutzpah, I'd say the holy audacity, to break it. There is even a commentator who says that really what motivated Moses to break the tablets was the fact that he saw the Jewish people bowing down to a golden calf. And he said, if they're going to make that object into a god, what are they going to do to God's tablets? And so the Meshech Chochmah says he then broke the tablets as a way of showing iconoclasm. But even if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him. If you meet the perfect tablets on the road, break them. If you meet your own orthodoxy, question it. If you come up to the limits, you know, a friend of mine this week, you know, she told me she wanted me to ask a question to somebody who was seen as a bit of a controversial speaker. Barry Weiss and I had a conversation last Sunday night. And a friend said, I want you to ask Barry, when was the last time she changed her mind about something she was absolutely sure about? Which is a legitimate question to ask any one of us, right? Like, what are the tablets that you thought, you know, there's no way? I'm never going to break those. More than one thinker, as Julia Kristeva and others, have said that good psychotherapy is showing you where you have your tablets and then showing you how to break them, right? Or the tablets that were inscribed not by God, but by your parents that you carry around. It's like, you know, I must not be happy. I must not, you know. Thou shalt not have what you really want, right? Thou shalt repeat mistakes and karma until, you know, pass forward, not pass back. So you have this beautiful moment that Rashi, it might have like glossed over most of us. Like, oh, wasn't Moshe's greatest moment when he split the sea? No. Not when he brought the law down from the mountain or brought the Israelites, like, no. When he as a leader knew that he had to break the tablets for all kinds of reasons. And for that, he becomes a great, great man, great leader. And the words Einod Vashivota Levavacha means that you bring it into your heart and that you have at least two things to take with you that from our tradition that are wisdom pieces, right? The first one about sometimes even God says, I'm angry, but I really want you to come in, and how that works for us in our own hearts and our own minds, listening deeply for people who say, leave me alone, but they really want us to come close. And all the ways you might permute that in your lives. Friends, people who say, I'm not lonely. It's like, really? Okay, I believe you. Just come out with me for a drink. And then we have the second piece about breaking tablets, which I can't underscore enough. I think about this teaching probably maybe once a day, maybe, you know, a lot, because I think it's one of the most profoundly moving piece of Torah. It's at a moment of complete trauma, what we would call a cataclysmic, seismic paradigm shift. And we all know that those things can be horribly painful. But from the broken tablets, we had a new paradigm emerged. And we never lost those broken tablets to remind us that when you look at it, a broken world, have faith that from the broken place, something will come. Maybe even in your own heart. Maybe even tonight.
Thank you for listening. Want more content like this? Subscribe to our podcast and visit romamu.org to learn more about us. Please consider making a contribution to Romamu so we can continue to fulfill our mission to help spiritual seekers deepen their connection to Jewish wisdom and practice to help them become more compassionate human beings. We hope to see you in the synagogue or the Zoomagogue soon. Romamu, Romamu, Adonai.